The truth is, we generally make our own luck. When you believe yourself to be lucky, that right there is a more optimistic attitude than considering yourself to be unlucky. And that mindset can mean you take greater and more frequent risks that could potentially result in greater rewards. Having conversation about luck on The Morning Show, I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Janice Kaplan is the author of 14 books, including one New York Times bestseller. She's worked as a writer, TV producer, magazine editor, and journalist. Her latest book is called How Luck Happens, Using the Science of Luck to Transform Work, Love, and Life. Janice, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
And Barnaby Marsh is here. He co-authored How Luck Happens. He's an expert on risk-taking who researched complex decision-making while a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford, and he conducts academic research now at Harvard and Princeton. Barnaby, welcome to you.
Thank you, and good morning.
Good morning. Well, Janice, let's start with you. What is the common perception about luck, and why do you want to challenge our understanding of luck?
Well, most people think of luck as something that just falls from the sky. They associate luck with random chance. And we started thinking about luck as actually something that you can control. And once you realize that you have some control over the events in your life, then you can change what happens. If you think that you're just, you know, being buffeted by the forces out there, there's not a whole lot that you can do. So it's really a very exciting approach to start saying, let's think about luck not just as something that happens to us, that befalls us, but something that we can have an effect on.
Well, Barnaby, with your research background in the mix, how much is this chance and how much is there science behind it?
Well, there's always chance in almost anything we do, but we found, and we were surprised, but the more we looked, there's a cause behind every effect. And the deeper you look, the more you realize that the amount that's in our lives that's left to pure chance is very small indeed.
What do you mean by that? Because, you know, things can happen day to day. We have fate and then we have luck. There's a lot of gray area here.
Yeah. So a lot of times when people don't understand what's behind their luck, they attribute it to something that they had no control over or random processes. But, of course, everything has a cause. And so that call that might come out of the blue from a friend asking you for, you know, whether you might be interested in a job, for instance, you look deeper, you realize, well, it was a friend. They happen to know what area of interest you have. As a result, it's just not something randomly happening out of the blue. You actually prepared for it earlier on without knowing that. So in many areas of our life, we're actively preparing for our future, but we don't know exactly how that's going to manifest itself until it does. And then we attribute it to just chance. But of course, it's not just chance. It was the groundwork that we laid and, you know, how we built our talents and who we connected to. And all those things come together to make what we call luck.
Well, Janice, you put yourself in situations in writing this book and talked with people, a lot of people, about luck and chance. One of the situations you were in was on a plane, and the person next to you was this Wisconsinite who was trying to find a way to work in Hollywood. Can you tell us about that interaction when you decided, I'm going to take my earbuds out and I'm going to interact with someone next to me?
Sure. Well, one of the fun things of working together with Barnaby was that Barnaby would come up with these principles of luck that he thought worked across all different platforms, whether you're talking about love or life or work. And then I would go out and see how they actually worked in real life. So one of the principles is that you need to connect to other people, that you need to have networks, and you need to have wide networks to create luck, because it's not just the people who are closest to you who create luck. You know, it's not going to be mom and dad and your best friends. It's more likely to be that next circle of people, what sociologists call weak ties, the people who you don't know as well, who have different connections than you do, know of different opportunities. So as you said, there I was on an airplane, and normally I, you know, put on my headphones and order my Diet Coke and don't talk to anybody, but I thought, okay, I got to follow Barnaby's rule here. And I looked over at the guy next to me, and he had a pile of magazines on his tray table, and they were Variety and Hollywood Reporter. And, well, I used to be a television producer, and I'm very involved in popular culture as a magazine editor, And so I thought, okay, this seems like a good opportunity. And I made some very feeble comment to start talking to him. And we struck up a conversation, and he turned out to be this fascinating guy who was actually the manager for big comics, including Bette Midler and Billy Crystal and the much-lamented Robin Williams. And we had this wonderful conversation, and we landed in New York, and we decided to continue the conversation, and we met for lunch a couple of weeks later. And it was a great example of, look, not everybody sitting next to you on an airplane is going to be interesting. I guarantee you that. And it doesn't mean that you should strike up conversations with everybody. But there are times, if you make your selections carefully and if you think about who you're trying to connect with and what you're trying to do, that sometimes you can make those interesting connections that leads to something fun and interesting.
And Janice, as I was working my way through your book, I just laughed out loud as I put a sticky note on our television last night that said, luck killer. I know with your TV producing background, you say, though, if we really hibernate, if we stay just connected in our own little orbits, or even in our own bed, that reduces our chances for good fortune.
Right. And, you know, Barnaby came up with the luck killer phrase for television. I did point out to him that I had been a TV producer, but he's 100% right, because, you know, so often we just burrow away, and particularly when things aren't going well, right? When you're not excited about something, when you're feeling down about something, if you've just lost a job, what do? You burrow away. You don't want to talk to anybody. You turn on the TV and you just kind of disappear. Well, guess what? Luck has never been made on your couch. You know, well, maybe in a different sense, but you know, you don't make luck by sitting at home. You make luck by taking that step, by going out, by trying to find those opportunities, and that's really important to remember.
Barnaby, you say people are most likely to be lucky when they pay attention for the best opportunities. What do you mean by that? What should we be watching for?
And this is one of the biggest findings, and we actually looked at how extraordinarily lucky people make their luck. They're just so much more aware of opportunities around them. And it made us realize how many opportunities we pass by every day. You know, people you can talk to, questions you can ask, just being generally inquisitive and curious. And guess what? You know, a lot of those might not lead anywhere, but sometimes they do. And when that leads in a new direction, an entirely new world can open up for you. So what we say in the book and what we've learned is that being attentive to possibility and opportunities is one of the greatest differences between people who make a lot of luck for themselves and those who consider themselves unlucky.
We're talking right now with the authors of the book, How Luck Happens, Using the Science of Luck to Transform Work, Love, and Life. Janice Kaplan and Barnaby Marsh are with us. You can join this conversation about luck, good fortune. Do you consider yourself lucky? Do you feel like you're unlucky? Join in at 800-642-1234. What forces do you see at work when it comes to luck? 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Barnaby, let's look at this local hill climbing strategy that you put forth. How should people visualize it? And what is this philosophy, this local hill climbing?
Yeah, the basic idea here is that a very simple rule in life is to make each day better than the last day, and that means making better results each day. And it's almost like climbing a hill. You're going higher and higher and higher each day. The only problem with that is that some hills are higher than others, and so there's only a certain amount you can climb on some hills. You might not know what that is, but the way to look at it in a population is that you have all these different hills, different people climbing these hills. And then some people realize, look, I've gotten to the top of my hill. I need to climb a bigger hill. But, of course, the issue there is you need to then take time to go off of one hill to get onto another hill, which means sometimes going through a valley. So this is a metaphor for many areas of life where we have aspirations and we pursue those, and hopefully we're successful at those aspirations. But sometimes switching to a new profession or a new hobby or something else that we want to do has cost. And so that's a metaphor for what it's like out there.
Janice, how did you put that metaphor into action? Could you make sense of it through the people, the stories that were told to you?
Well, you know, you brought up before the gentleman that I met on the plane from Wisconsin, and he had indeed grown up in Wisconsin. His name is David Steinberg, and he was from Milwaukee. He was a kid who was selling aluminum siding to put himself through college, but he was fascinated with Hollywood. He wanted to be in Hollywood. He wanted to get into that world. So he picked himself up, and he moved there, and he met a lot of people, and he had, you know, a cousin who knew somebody who connected him to, I think at the time it was Sammy Davis Jr., and they became friends and went on from there. So I think very often to make luck, you have to make luck. You have to get up and go somewhere. It's not to say that there can't be great opportunities in Wisconsin. Of course, there are wonderful things you can do there, but very often if you have a goal, you're going to have to move. You're going to have to go somewhere else. You're going to have to go to Silicon Valley or go to Hollywood or go someplace where you can try to achieve what, you know, the ultimate of what you want. And as Barnaby suggested, that requires giving something up. Sometimes that means, you know, taking a step down, taking a step back, putting yourself in a lower position where you are right now with the goal of ultimately reaching a higher one.
But at the same time, Barnaby, when you put yourself in a new orbit like that, that is so highly competitive, I mean, you're just a little fish in a big pond.
That's right. I mean, there's always possibilities for growth, and there's a lot of risk and uncertainty. So we talk about this a little bit in the book. It makes sense to diversify and not put all of your eggs into one proverbial basket, but to make sure you have a few different options. So if one option doesn't work out, you have others.
The Latin proverb tells us fortune favors the bold. We're learning about finding good fortune with Janice Kaplan and Barnaby Marsh. They're co-authors of the new book, How Luck Happens. You can join the discussion with your questions, your observations, 800-642-1234. Do you consider yourself lucky? What makes you think that? Have you changed your luck? Maybe you experienced some hard times. What strategy did you use to make things better? Did you become luckier after that? Call in or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation in just a moment right here on the Ideas Network. What truly differentiates between the fortunate and unfortunate? What's the difference between our fate, the cards that we're dealt with, and luck? These are questions we're exploring with the authors of the new book, How Luck Happens, Using the Science of Luck to Transform Work, Love, and Life. Bestselling author Janice Kaplan and researcher Barnaby Marsh stay with us. Your insights on luck are welcome at 800-642-1234. How much of your fortune or misfortune do you credit to luck? Call in, tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Rich joining us from Rhinelander. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning. It's a sunny day in Wisconsin, and I do appreciate the sunny content of the conversation, but I want the authors to discuss privilege versus luck because, for instance, I was not born to a Native American tribe in Wisconsin or anywhere else. That isn't luck, that's privilege. I was born male, not female. That isn't luck, that's privilege. In the world of sexual orientation, I developed into an adult gay man. Let me tell you, that was not luck. That was a hard-won fight over 70-plus years of my life. And I think sometimes the intricate and complicated networks of privilege are confused with luck. And I don't mean to rain on this parade, but having just watched a video clip of Nina Simone's life, a jazz pianist who was trained as a classic pianist, but who was unable to become a concert pianist because she was born black in America, where slavery and the results of slavery are at the core of our lives.
Rich, thank you. And I want to get Janice to jump in here. Janice, go ahead.
Well, I'll defer to Barnaby on this for a moment. Go ahead.
So, yeah, we actually get this question. And undoubtedly, some people have privilege, and some of those people consider themselves very lucky to have that privilege. But our book really focuses on how anyone can make luck. And also, I want to point out that a lot of people who are born with great privilege don't actually end up using it so well. And there are many examples of people who are not born with such privilege to make the most of what they have and really excel in many ways. So that's really what our message is. We're interested in how people make the most of what they have. But no, undoubtedly, there's a lot of inequality in the world. Whether that's through luck or other factors, that's something that can actually be addressed by making luck, which is what we argue for in the book.
Well, Rich does make a really interesting point in that what is the difference between what our fate is, what cards we're dealt with, and luck? Janice.
We define luck, and I know that one of the things we did in this book is turn the definition of luck upside down. We're not calling it random chance. We're saying that luck has three strands, and one of those strands is random chance. And those are the things that your caller was just describing, the things that you have no control over, or you have very little control over. Sometimes you have more than you realize. But put that aside for the moment, because we say that there are two other strands that contribute to luck. One of them is talent, and one of them is hard work. And by talent, we don't mean that you have to be Meryl Streep. By talent, we mean that you have to take advantage of opportunities, you have to see possibilities, you have to be open to the world around you, you have to have those networks that we were talking about before. So many of the principles that we lay out in the book of the things that become what we're calling luck. And that third strand, hard work, is hard work. There's no way around it. So if you put those together, if you take that random chance, which is where you started in life, how you were born, all of those things that your caller and others often point out, that's true. That's where you're starting. But if you take that and you say, well, that means there's nothing I could do, then you're just never going to make luck, and you're starting with the wrong attitude. If you say, okay, this is my starting point, this is my random chance, this is what has happened, now what do I do with that? Now how do I take all the talents I can possibly muster, all the things that I can learn, how can I take all that hard work that I have, put those together, then you're making a lucky life. And that's what you're trying to do. And of course, the lucky life may be different for you and me and Barnaby. We all have our own definitions of what that is, and some of it comes from where we start, and some of it comes from where we would like to be.
Let's go to Michelle now, joining us from Madison. Hi, Michelle.
Hi there. Thank you so much for the show. I find this just fascinating. I've always thought that I live sort of a charmed life, and I've actually felt sort of guilty about it at times. I did not grow up in privilege. My mother was a single mother, and we lived in a trailer home in Indiana. I ended up getting a degree at UW-Madison. I ended up meeting the love of my life, who I've been with for about 25 years. And, you know, just hearing you talk about laying the groundwork, I started playing the flute in school, and I just loved it. And I decided, you know, if you just do what you love, it'll just be fun. Well, that ended up getting me into a high symphonic band in high school, and then led to a scholarship at a music school. Then as far as meeting a man, I thought, I want to meet somebody who, you know, really honestly just sort of treats me like a queen, treats me better than I treat myself.
Well, Michelle, thank you so much. Barnaby, it sounds like strains of the book coming out here through Michelle's life.
When we looked at the people who considered themselves lucky, we saw many of the things that Michelle is describing. And we really do think that through outlook, through optimism, that if you have that sort of an outlook, you can actually shift your odds. And what that means is you can basically shift the direction of your life and shift the probabilities that good things happen. Of course, that doesn't guarantee that everything's going to work out just the way you want it to. But often that notion that, I have a goal and I'm going to work for it and I love it, it's more robust. What that means is that you're not as likely to give up if you really feel there's a goal there and there's a path for you. And conversely, for people who don't persist quite as long or who don't have quite as clear of a goal, it's a lot harder for that type of orientation to generate the type of luck that we see amongst people who consider themselves lucky.
It sounded to me also like Michelle was a perfect example of what we talk about in the book, of how optimism creates luck. She started out the conversation by saying, I'm a lucky person. And then she went on to talk about all of the things that don't sound lucky to us, right? She grew up in a trailer park. She had all of these other things. But she saw herself as somebody who was lucky. And so she was going to go out and make those opportunities. So often luck really comes from our perception of where we want to be and what we're going to do. If she sees herself as a lucky person and she had that wonderful, I hate to do psychology by phone, but she had that wonderful upbeat sound to her voice, she's probably going to go out and make it a lucky day because that's how she's going to see the world. And if you start out from that sense of I'm an unlucky person, bad things happen to me, look, I was born in a trailer park, there's nothing I can do, then there is nothing you can do because you're not seeing the opportunities. You're not going to jump on the possibilities. So optimism and positivity really, we found, are just extraordinarily important traits in making a lucky life.
And what Michelle's saying there is a good segue into a part of your book, Janice, where you look at how to transfer good fortune to our children, how our children should view luck. You talked with Professor Amy Chua about parenting and what a coincidence. Amy Chua is going to be on the program tomorrow, so this conversation might whet our appetites. She's going to be talking about her new book. But what did Professor Chua, because she was known as, quote unquote, the tiger mom in her last book, but what was her approach to parenting and good fortune for children?
Well, she's become slightly less ardent and full of herself than she was when she wrote that book. But that book about parenting, where she felt that, you know, she had to set strong goals for her children, and she was a little more humble when we spoke to her and saying, you know, gosh, parenting is hard. But she also saw that that to make children lucky, they do need preparation, they do need that investment from their parents, and they do need to believe in themselves. And you know, as we were just talking about. So interestingly, she's famous for being, you know, tiger mom, making her kids do stuff. She's also taken the position now that she's opposed to helicopter parenting, and that she actually thinks that children and teenagers need to struggle a little bit and realize that they can make things happen for themselves, because that's the way you start to believe in yourself, and that's the way you start to believe that you can do something. If we're doing everything for our kids, they don't realize that they have some control over their lives. They feel like everything is just happening to them. And so it's very important, whether you're talking about toddlers or teenagers, that they get that sense that, yeah, I can control my life. I can control the outcome. And, you know, children often are very much at the mercy of their adults. And if we can give them a little bit more control over their lives and a little bit more control over what they do, then we may be preparing them to be a little bit luckier.
Do we know anything about their self-awareness, when that develops, when that perception of themselves develops about whether they are, quote unquote, a lucky or an unlucky person?
Well, you know, I think it's very, very early on. And I was actually speaking to a nursery school director yesterday who was suggesting that one way to make lucky kids is to let kids be kids. You know, if you give your two-year-old a ball to play with and she doesn't want to play catch the way an adult would play catch, but she wants to throw it up in the air and chase after it, well, maybe you should play that game. Maybe you should play her game instead of demanding that she plays your game, because then she starts to see that she has a little bit of control over her world, and maybe it's okay to do things a little bit differently, which becomes, for adults, one of the things we found that not necessarily being on the standard path, going in a slightly different direction can also be a way of making luck.
Barnaby, your thoughts on that?
Absolutely, I agree. I actually homeschool my two children, and they're very different personalities. And it's one of the, in our schooling system, it assumes that all children are very similar, but they're not. And so allowing children to develop according to, what their interests are and what their curiosity is, and in a timing that's right for them, I think is one of the building blocks to building confidence and building a sense that, the world can change through my action, and I have some control over things. And I think that starts very early on. I think it starts well before school.
Let's go to Ricardo now, who's joining us on the road between Milwaukee and Madison. Hi, Ricardo.
Hello. How are you guys doing this morning?
Doing well. We can hear you. Go ahead.
Thank you. First of all, you're filling really huge shoes, Ms. Kent. I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I find that they were talking about opportunity and luck, and it's also, I think, you need to add in choices to that. For example, we like to hike, and we go on state forest trails, and I always grab one of these grocery bags, and I take it with me, and I try to clean up people's trash that have gone along. And because I've made that choice not too long ago, one of the pieces of trash I picked up was a $20 bill. Another time it was somebody's driver's license, and I contacted them, and we've actually become very good friends.
Oh, wow.
Another example is anywhere I travel, I like to go on brewery tours, right? I live in Wisconsin. Here's a statistic for you. I've been probably on maybe 40 brewery tours in my life, and every one of them had somebody from Wisconsin also on it.
Ricardo.
So I think your idea of opportunity and choice is very important.
Ricardo, thank you so much for the call. Drive safe. Janice, he's doing something good for the world, but then suddenly something lucky happens.
It's a really wonderful example. I love that idea that he's cleaning up the hiking trails just to be a good environmentalist and outdoorsman and hiker, and he finds a $20 bill. It's a very concrete example of the fact that so often if you put goodness into the world, it's going to come back to you, and that luck spreads. He's making luck for those hikers who are coming after him by cleaning up their trails. And he's finding that the luck comes back to him. I don't think there's a magical karma that's occurring there, but I do think that there is a sense of what Barnaby has called luck cascades. That as luck grows, as you try to give luck to others, there's plenty of luck in the world for everybody. Luck is not a zero-sum game. It's not that if I get luck, you don't get luck. So I think your caller is very much a great example of that, and he's right. We should all go out and clean up those trails.
Let's go to David now, joining us from Richland Center with some thoughts. David, go ahead.
Hello, Kate. I'm pretending to be you-know-who.
I gotcha, right.
Well, I'll tell you why, because here's the deal. Kevin doesn't fake it. Kevin has worked very, very hard. In fact, he talks about that. And when he does his planning, he's talking about people planning and working hard. He doesn't talk about luck. In fact, he discourages luck. He says that, look, you do the lottery. I sit at Quick Trip and I have a cup of coffee in the morning. I watch these people come in with the scratch cards. They're spending hundreds of dollars. I see them at the food pantry. That's where they are, in the food pantry. But yet they come over here and they think they're going to win something. You don't win anything. The only thing that comes out of the sky is shit, bird shit. If you want to wait around for that, then you're going to be covered in it. I don't mean to be mean about this. It's just a topic that the people are good. I mean, if you're going to write books and you're going to do all that mumbo jumbo and you're going to talk like that, you got to write volumes and you got to be long-winded. I mean, otherwise, how would you make money?
But David, you make a really good point, though, because someone thinks of luck as a lucky break, like winning the lottery, like going in for your ticket.
I'm not going to I'm going to let it happen.
Yeah, and I want to get Barnaby to respond, though, there. That.
Well, thank you. And again, hello.
David, thanks so much for that. But Barnaby, you know, lucky breaks can come in other ways besides someone winning a lottery ticket or their YouTube video becoming an instant sensation.
Well, let me add one thing that this brings up that I think is also critically important is to realize that a lucky break isn't the same as a lucky outcome. And we saw that as being really important in a lot of the case studies that we had, is that people would be getting lucky breaks, sometimes not even realizing that they had them, and then not being prepared to capture that luck. And likewise, even with something as random as a lottery drawing, that doesn't always lead to a lucky outcome. And so people think, well, winning the lottery is lucky. But when you actually look at the lives of lottery winners, a lot of times there might be a short bump in happiness and a bit more money to spend. But longer term, it can also have very detrimental effects. So when we think about luck, we like to differentiate between the different events in the world that we can capitalize on and make into lucky outcomes for ourselves, and the art of making that outcome itself.
And your book includes an example that you posed about a tiny luck break, a tiny in that becomes huge. Tell us about choosing between a penny and $1 million.
Janet, how do you handle it?
Barnaby gave this example to me where he we were taking a walk one day, and he was trying to explain how what he was just saying, that a lucky break is not necessarily this cataclysmic event. It can sometimes be very small. And he said, so if I were giving you a lucky penny that doubled every day, would that feel lucky? And, you know, I did my quick math, and I went, well, you know, at the end of the week, that penny's going to be worth 64 cents, so that doesn't seem so lucky, Barnaby. And he said, okay, how about if I give you that lucky penny for a month, would that seem lucky? And I couldn't decide. And he said, well, do you want the lucky penny for the month, or do you want $1 million at the end of the month? Well, hey, $1 million, of course I'm going to take $1 million, Barnaby. We then did the math there, or he did, and it turns out that lucky penny at the end of the month is worth $10 million. Barnaby did unfortunately tell me that this was all theoretical, and he was not giving me either. It's a wonderful example that stuck with me because so often the events that come in life are indeed that doubling penny, that little event that if you take it and you act on it and you keep making it bigger and bigger and bigger and growing it, you're going to end up with that lucky life. And that's what we're seeking, right? We're not seeking that one event. We're not seeking one great lucky day. We're seeking that lucky life. And what you want to be able to do is capitalize on something and make your luck grow and make your opportunities grow.
It seems so much of life is beyond our control, which is one of the things about luck. Luck is what happens to us for better or for worse, but we're learning how we can coax out some good fortune, some more good luck. We're with Janice Kaplan and Barnaby Marsh. They're the authors of the new book, How Luck Happens. You can join in the conversation. Do you consider yourself to be a lucky person? What makes you think that? 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll get back to the conversation in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. Social psychologists say we mortals try to understand and explain life experiences by making either an internal or external attribution. That is to say, we either blame ourselves for our misfortunes, or we blame something other than ourselves or someone other than ourselves, or we blame bad luck. But bad luck in one moment can turn into something that turns out to be very helpful or fortunate or beneficial. We're talking about luck on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Authors Janice Kaplan and Barnaby Marsh stay with us. Their book is How Luck Happens, Using the Science of Luck to Transform Work, Love, and Life. Getting your thoughts and questions about good fortune at 800-642-1234. How much of your fortune or misfortune do you credit to luck? Why do you consider it a force in your life? Or is it a scapegoat for disappointment? Call in or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go back to the phones now with Eugene joining us from Biola. Hi, Eugene.
Good morning. I'm a firm believer that you make your own luck. I've done it over a lifetime. When you want something, you go after it and see if it'll work. And there's three boys in the family, and our mother never told us we'd failed on anything. It just didn't work, and you tried something else, and you never know what will come out of something. I bought a 12-room home for just a few $100 down. I didn't know if it'd work or not, but it did, pretty much. And I've done a lot of things over a lifetime, pretty much.
So, Eugene, you also see it as taking risks.
Yeah, I'll take a risk. I'll take a calculated risk. I look at something and I do the unconventional, pretty much, just to see if it'll go, pretty much. And you never know what will come out of it. You never know what kind of networking of people that you will meet, pretty much, and who you're going to talk to in a situation.
Eugene, thanks so much, and let's get Barnaby on calculated risks. Because, Barnaby, I mean, you could take some wild risk, but how would it be different than a calculated risk?
Absolutely. You can think ahead to what could go right and what could go wrong. And part of the key of doing, part of the reason that's good to do is because you can get a sense for how we can buffer against what we call downside risk. If things go wrong, how long are you willing to stick with things until you can see whether they can go right or not? But I love the gentleman's attitude. That's exactly what we see in terms of people making a lot of luck for themselves. You go out there and you try things. Even if it doesn't work out the way that you thought it would or the way that you calculated it would, you're learning. You're learning about your environment. So the next time a risk comes along, you're much better prepared. So his outlook was precisely the type of outlook we saw amongst people who made good luck for themselves. And conversely, other people, you know, might go out and just have fear. They might think about everything that could go wrong. Of course, the opposite is true there. You could be out and doing something, things could go wrong, and then the challenge is to figure out how to turn things around, how to fix it. And that's a very constructive outlook. Makes a lot of luck. It generates huge amounts of luck that are not necessarily even part of your original calculation, as he was suggesting.
Well, Janice, the book seems to have this drumbeat of say yes to things, to embrace life, to be ambitious, to get away from the TV or whatever it is. But that could also set you up for an imbalance in your life, that if you're saying yes to everything, things can get really out of whack. And then someone else could be unlucky due to your drive, your seeming good fortune. So how do you manage that?
Well, again, I don't think of luck as a zero-sum game that you win, I lose. I think we can make luck for each other. And it's not necessarily saying yes to everything. I do think you need to focus and know where you're headed. If you have a goal, you're much more likely to get to that goal. If you can say specifically what it is you want, you're much more likely to reach it. There was actually a study that the Nobel laureate Daniel Kahneman had done where he looked at a previous study of college students at age 18 who had been asked about certain goals, one of them being how important is it to you to be wealthy in 20 years? And they rated that on a scale of 1, 2, 3, 4, 4 being the highest. And he found that the students who at age 18 said that being wealthy was number 4, was, you know, very high to them, 20 years later were much likelier to be wealthy than anybody else in their class. And it was by a dramatic amount. And each number that they wanted it more, they were that much more likely to reach that goal. And I think that would be true if the question had been asked of how much do you want to be an actor and how much do you want to be in the Peace Corps and how much do you want to work in a nonprofit and change the world. I think when we know what we want, we're much more likely to put the steps in place, consciously or unconsciously, that brings us to that point. And, you know, so if just by knowing at age 18 that you want to make money 20 years later, you're likely to, is that luck, or is that something that you have done to create it, that you have said yes to the opportunities, focused and gone where you want to go?
Let's bring in Carol to the conversation. Carol joining us from McHenry, Illinois. Hi, Carol.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
This is just a question for the guests. If you're kind of the type of person that, you know, just naturally wants to make the best of life and, you know, maybe has some talent and pursues it, and there can be, let's just say, interlopers that you think, well, especially maybe family members or in-laws that just maybe don't have that same view of life and, you know, pretend to be your friends and maybe just speak to how you have to be careful of, you know, people that don't want the best for you. And how do you, you know, work with that, especially when they're family members?
Oh, yeah. So Janice, how do you work with family members who drag you down?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think one of the most frustrating things when you're an upbeat, positive person is dealing with people who are not that way. You know, my last book was The Gratitude Diaries, and I would hear over and over again from people saying, you know, I try to be grateful, and my mother, sister, father, whoever it may be, is always ungrateful. And once you get that positive attitude, once you know you want to be grateful, know you want to create luck, know you want to make the best for yourself, it's really frustrating to deal with people who don't see that. And, you know, if they're close family members, it's difficult. But I think you have to be very straightforward. I think you have to be able to say, you know, I want to make this great for myself or for the world or whatever it is that you're trying to do. And let them know that positivity is really important to you, and try to turn their views around of things. When you're constantly hearing negativity about yourself or the world, you just want to tell that person, hey, let's stop for a moment and turn it around. Maybe this was an unlucky moment. Let's think how we can make it a lucky moment. You think what I'm doing isn't good luck? Let's think about how we can make this positive. And it's a tough fight with some people, but it's worth it.
Carol, thanks for the call. Janice, how do you begin to talk about being lucky in a disaster? And how can people confronted with a pretty severe crisis in their life, or the most severe crisis they've had, better position themselves to get through it?
Yeah, we do have a couple of chapters about disasters and your worst moments. And again, it's sort of that same idea of trying to, well, let's talk about something like losing a job. When you've lost your job, it feels awful, and you feel like you're in a hole that you're never going to get out of. And one trick that that somebody had suggested to Barnaby, Professor Barnaby works with, said, why don't you try to pull back and almost look at yourself from above? You know, look at where you are. Look down at yourself so that you can start to see the many paths in front of you, rather than feeling just caught in that moment. And we spoke to Lee Child, the very wonderful author of the best-selling Jack Reacher novels. And he said that he became a writer after he had lost his job as a TV producer. And he had a wife and a kid and a mortgage and a car payment. And he was angry and furious. And he thought, what can I possibly do? And he started writing novels. Well, you know, when you've lost your job, you don't know that you're going to become an internationally best-selling novelist whose books get turned into movies with Tom Cruise. You don't know that at the moment. But if you can somehow try to take that bad moment and think about it as an opportunity, think about how can I look back in 5 years and say, this was a good turning point. This was, you know, I lost my job, but really all I wanted to ever be was a radio announcer. And so I'm going to go ahead and see if I can get a job doing that. If you can try to take it as an opportunity, you can possibly change your luck from bad to good.
Let's bring in Jim now in Dodgeville with some ideas. Jim, go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I grew up on a rented farm with 11 brothers and sisters, and so life wasn't handed to anyone. I've stepped out of my comfort level, and when I had done that in my life and took some risks, it was tough, but those times that it didn't work out, I just chalked it up to education. Another thing that was kind of interesting, I tried to adopt the greeting to someone that when they'd ask how I was, I'd say never better. And it grew on me. And today I'm some people call me Mr. McLucky. And I think that life is kind of a cycle, that the luckier we feel, the luckier we might get, and the luckier we might get, the luckier we feel. So,
Jim, does that permeate it? When you respond to people saying never better, does that infuse other people with your attitude?
It shocks them, I think, at first. I even got called by a fellow worker one time about that your day has never been better, or you're just BSing. And I guess I was, but I felt that my life was never better, and every day it got better. And I don't care if they think it's a fake, but it helped me. And then people would greet me with never better. And so I don't know. I'm Irish, and this is kind of timely.
Well,
St. Patrick's is Saturday. Thank
yes,
you.
It is indeed. Jim, Mr. McLucky, yeah. Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, Janice, your thoughts there.
Well, you know, I got a big smile while I'm listening to him. How can you not be happy when somebody says never better when you ask how they are, right? And like that previous caller also who had that great optimistic attitude, I think it's such a great example from your terrific callers today that that positive attitude, that belief that I can be lucky. He's calling himself Mr. Lucky. He's going to be lucky, or he's going to see the luck. He's going to take the opportunities that that wherever you're starting, whatever your position, you can make that happen for yourself. And it gave me a big smile this morning listening to them, and I hope it did for your other listeners too.
Well, Barnaby, you know, you say that you can't control everything, but we have more power than we realize. How can we use what we've found, what you found through luck? What is that first step? What can we change today?
I think, you know, especially for your listeners, these examples, it's just a shift of outlook. Instead of thinking that of despondency and what's gone wrong, think about what's could go right and try it and persist. And it's just a small, tiny shift in outlook that can allow you to reap an entire new range of rewards and create an entirely new type of life.
Well, Janice Kaplan and Barnaby Marsh, thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
It was a great pleasure. Thank you.
Janice Kaplan is the author of 14 books, including many New York Times bestsellers. She's worked as a writer, TV producer, magazine editor, and journalist. Her latest book is How Luck Happens, Using the Science of Luck to Transform Work, Love, and Life. Barnaby Marsh co-authored How Luck Happens. He's an expert on risk-taking who researched complex decision-making while a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford. He conducts research now at Harvard and Princeton. This hour, The Morning Show was produced by Keely Baltina. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. Michael Deringer provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation on luck, good fortune, you find it on your Lucky Ideas Network. Thanks so much for listening.